welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you, and regrettably, Joseph Cooper still recovering from a back injury. Well, is there anyone who doesn't like fried food?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Some of us do our best to avoid it, while others seem to give in more readily to the urge to indulge. And what would you consider the ultimate fried comfort food? Joining us now is Cordon Bleu chef, author, syndicated columnist, and our friend, Linda Gassenheimer.
So nice to be friends with you, Bonnie. Can always depend on you.
Welcome, Linda. How are you?
Nice to be here.
Good.
Okay, fried chicken, America's number one comfort food, is getting star treatment. And it's getting the star treatment from the master planner of the South Beach Wine and Food Festival, Lee Schrager. Lee Schrager, I was surprised, considering that the festival features some of the finest wines and foods in the world, that he was writing a fried chicken book. But his new book, it's called Fried and True, more than 50 recipes for America's best fried chicken and sides. And he's here to give us some tips on making perfect fried chicken at home. Let's welcome Lee Schrager.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Nice to have you with us.
Likewise.
And we'd love to have you, our listeners, join us. What is your favorite fried chicken? Or do you have any questions for Lee Schrager? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. And email?
Email is radio@WLRN.org, and you can tweet us at Topical Currents.
Also with us, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and he gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes columns in the Miami Herald. And you can also read Fred's wine column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, first I want to say hi to Lee. Nice to be with you.
Fred,
and,
always nice to be with you.
I'm going to talk about the kinds of wines that I think would go with fried chicken, and then maybe ask Lee for some of his opinions.
Okay, sounds good. Lee, are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
All right. Okay, Lee Schrager, fried chicken. Why an entire book devoted to it?
Well, interestingly enough, as I got into it, I found out that there really had never been a book on fried chicken, a book totally dedicated.
A whole book. Did you think maybe there was a reason?
No, I never thought. I just thought that there was a need, after doing some research. And I think what we found is that it's really, like you said, America's number one favorite iconic comfort food. And that everybody, whether it was a white tablecloth chef like a Jean-Georges or a Daniel Ballou or Andrew Carmelini, or great chefs that no one ever heard of, great cooks that no one ever heard of, along shacks along the side of the street, had a great fried chicken story.
Well, obviously you were right to write it, because you told me before the show that it's just flying off the shelves.
We couldn't be more pleased with the success. Nothing says summer like fried chicken, school out, watermelon, and it was good timing to get a book on fried chicken.
Well, congratulations to that. So you traveled all over the U.S. gathering recipes instead of just having the chefs, which you could easily do, have them just send you their recipes. Why was the road trip so important to you?
I think we wanted to hear the stories. I think one thing that we learned, in speaking and doing a lot of the legwork in writing the book, was that everybody had a story, whether it was Thomas Keller, whether it was somebody on the side of the street in Alabama. Everybody had a story about where their recipe came from, whether it was passed on from a relative, whether it was something, a recipe they learned how to cook early on in their career, whether it was something that their mom taught them how to cook. Every story, every recipe had a story that came together.
Well, that's so, and I want to hear some of those stories. And you mentioned somebody like Thomas Keller from the French Laundry, where it's $300 a person, major white tablecloth restaurant. And also in the book, you have something from something like Prince's Hot Chicken Shack. So from the shack to the world famous, what were some of your favorite stories? What were some of these people like?
We probably visited over 200 restaurants in writing this book and ended up with...
I want to know if you ate at all of them.
Every one of them.
For sure. How long did this take you?
We were on a road trip last June and July. Uh-huh. And then we'd done some work beforehand and some work that came in after it. But every recipe in this book, everyone except the... Yotam Ottolenghi, we did not go to London to try his schnitzel that's in the book, but when he did our New York City Wine and Food Festival last year, he prepared it for us and we shot it there. So there's not a recipe in the book that we did not try in its venue, except for the Yotam Ottolenghi recipe, and that we didn't reproduce many times to make sure that it was accessible for the home cook. That was really important for us, that all the recipes be available
for
the home
cook. So I would like to ask you, how did you test these recipes? Did you have other people testing them, or how did you go about it?
Once we received the recipe, we tested them together, whether it was in my kitchen out last summer in the Hamptons or in New York City in my apartment, or when we were finally ready to shoot the book in the professional photography studio. But every recipe was tested at least 3 times before it went into the book for adjustments. You know, some of these chefs are not chefs. Some of them are simple home cooks with some of the best recipes who really kind of, it was more a pinch of this and a touch of that. And it was really important that we made sure that there were no problems with the recipes, because there's nothing more disappointing for someone than to be making dinner for their family or friend and the recipe's wrong.
Did the best recipes always come from the South? I mean, we think of the South as being the home of, you know, fried chicken.
Well, you are 100% wrong. And like like myself.
That makes you feel good, Bonnie.
Yes, Bonnie. You took away. I would have asked you, where do you think fried chicken came from? So, Linda, where does fried chicken come from?
Oh,
well. What would you have said, Linda?
What would I have said?
What would you have said?
I don't know.
Well, clearly, as I jokingly, I was playing with Bonnie, and she did not get my book yet, but I'll make sure she gets it. And Linda,
it is in your book, and I read it.
It is in my book.
Yes.
So I.
But I don't remember it.
Well, it's the most obscure place that you'd think fried chicken would come from.
Is it? Oh, it's the most obscure place.
Well, not obscure. Just you wouldn't think fried chicken coming from there.
I was going to say London, but never mind.
No.
No, London's dreary. Scotland's obscure.
Scotland.
The first early reportings of fried chicken in the
1700s. But it was British, so I was almost right.
You were somewhat right.
Yes, thank you.
You were somewhat right.
I knew it was up there somewhere.
In the same area, exactly.
Why Scotland?
That I can't answer. I can't tell you why it came from Scotland. I can tell you that the earliest reportings of fried chicken came from Scotland in the 1700s, then made its way over to the States and ended up in the Deep South. And the slaves really are the people who put their own interpretations on it. They would make it for their masters or for their families and sell it. A lot of them sold it. And it's, you know, that's why the beauty of fried chicken is that everyone thinks it's such an iconic food from the South, but it is not. It is definitely from Scotland.
Well, you know, you mentioning that we always think it's from the South, and what I thought was so fascinating in your book, by the way, Fried and True, I think that's a great title.
Yeah, that is a great title.
It's a really terrific title. You have versions from Indian and Asian, even gluten. You even have a gluten-free one. I noticed you have a recipe from Hai Vong. Hai Vong's a just delightful little Vietnamese restaurant.
Hole in the wall, right here on Southwest 8th Street in Miami.
Right. And her recipe is so simple. Tell us what makes her recipe so good. There's almost nothing in it. I mean,
maybe that's what makes it so good. Sometimes it's the simplicity. I mean, there are restaurants that have 27 ingredients in it, and they're great. There are restaurants that have two ingredients in it, and they're great. In the sense of Hai Vong, it's really the oil that you're using and the seasoning. I mean, it's very, very, very lightly dipped in flour. There's no dredge in it. I mean, there's no wash in it. So it's really a half a chicken that's dredged very quickly in flour, then fried in wonderful sesame oil.
And can you bring sesame oil up to that temperature? Because it's
Absolutely, it fries up. And one of the most important things to do in frying is to make sure you're frying at the right temperature. Probably the greatest tip that I can give any of your listeners is to fry at that 370 degrees. Make sure your oil starts at 370.
So, well, give us some more tips if we want to make the perfect fried chicken at home.
Well, I think there are a lot of different tips, and some of my favorites are, brining or not to brine. That is the question, to brine or not to brine. And
For some people may not know what brine is.
Brining is really nothing more than tenderizing a product. It could be marinating it. It could be dipping it in a salt water solution. It could be marinating in fresh herbs and spices overnight. You could marinate for an hour, or you could brine for an hour or two, or some of the recipes called for 12
Doesn't
hours.
Doesn't it make it very salty?
Well, I'd have to say that depending on which recipe you're using, it could make it salty. But ultimately, if you take a kosher chicken, which is, if you don't have time to brine, use a kosher chicken.
I noticed that tip in your book. I thought it was interesting. Because they kosher it with salt.
Right. Exactly. It's koshered with salt. So that makes a big difference. And so if you don't have time to brine, use a kosher chicken. And you don't have to brine at all. I will tell you, some recipes you can take a big taste a big difference if you've brined the chicken beforehand. Others you really can't. So I think the key ingredient in fried chicken, as you'll see in Fried and True, is really the oil that you're using.
Fred, did you want to add something?
I was just wondering when that fried chicken was invented in Scotland. Do you know about when it happened?
The 1700s.
1700s. Yep. So it's only been around for that long.
It's been around since the 1700s, exactly.
Wow.
That we know of.
That we know of course. Right, right. That's been recorded. The earliest recordings of fried chicken.
Okay, so you were mentioning some tips. What about, what do you fry it in if you don't have a professional fryer, an electric fryer or something? What is some
cast iron. I mean, there's nothing, not only does it look good, it smells good, it's authentic. I mean, cast iron is, I couldn't think of frying in anything other than cast iron.
A shallow pan?
A cast iron, some of them are quite high.
Everyone, this is not television.
Right. Sorry.
He's showing us his hand,
no,
I'd say 5 inches.
cast iron can be as high as 4 inches, 5, 6 inches high. Right. So, yeah. I mean, when you're frying, you need to have the oil covering the chicken.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, that's the important thing. When you're deep frying, there's a large quantity of oil. When you're frying in a skillet, it's just enough chicken to cover the top of the chicken in the skillet. But I think the skillet is the best way and easiest way to fry.
Well, that's interesting, because I would have thought of a deep sauce pan.
No. I think it's, I love the skillet. I love the cast iron skillet. I think it's adds a certain taste to it.
Do you reuse the oil?
I do, certainly. Uh-huh. I think, again, the key to ingredient with the oil is the temperature. So if you're going to reuse it, if you're going to make a few batches in the same day, make sure that, you know, once you clean it, if you're going to clean the oil, which you can do or you don't have to do, is to get the temperature back up to that 370.
When you were talking about the Vietnamese restaurant and you said the oil, were you talking about a type of oil that
sesame.
They use?
Sesame. They use a sesame oil.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's highly seasoned already. I mean, what's so wonderful about the Hai Vong is it's cooked in this hot, it's probably higher than 370 degrees, and they finish it with peppers and wonderful scallions on top. And it's really one of the best things out there. And I think it's $10.95 in the menu. We had it on Sunday night.
Okay. We're drooling and hungry and sending everybody out to get some Hai Vong fried chicken, we need to take a small break here.
Great.
I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking fried chicken with Lee Schrager. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Lee Schrager. He's the founder of the South Beach and New York Wine and Food Festival. His latest book is Fried and True, More Than 50 Recipes for America's Best Fried Chicken and Sides. And he's been giving us tips on how to make the perfect fried chicken at home and taking us on a tour of America's favorite country foods. On another note, please mark your calendars for June 17th for the annual Share Our Strengths Taste of the Nation South Florida. It'll be at the Lowe's Miami Beach Hotel. And many of South Florida's top chefs are going to be there. I think there's some 60 chefs are going to be there, and you'll be able to taste some of their wonderful foods all in one go. And many thanks to Chef Allen, who once more has been very instrumental in organizing this event. It's an important event and one we should all support. And for more information, go to, now it's a difficult, just get this down, it's nokidhungry.org, South Florida. But go to No Kid Hungry and look for it. It'll be at this Lowe's Hotel, June 17th. And now it's Dinner in Minutes time. So for today's Dinner in Minutes, I thought we'd have a quick summer salad. It's not fried chicken because it's going to be a quick and easy recipe.
Fried chicken can be quick and easy.
Yes, it can. Absolutely.
In minutes?
In minutes. The Hai Vong recipe can't take more than 5-6 minutes.
All right, we'll get back to that, right?
Okay, we'll get back to that recipe. Okay, this is a summer salad. It's a sausage potato salad. It does use a turkey sausage. You can serve it warm or at room temperature, and it tastes even better made the second day, a day ahead, and because the potatoes absorb more of the sauce. So you cut potatoes into small pieces, about a half an inch. Don't peel them, not necessary. Place them in cold water. Cover them with cold water, bring them to a boil, cover with a lid, cook about 15 minutes. And while that's cooking, I use some turkey sausage, but you could use some chicken sausage. Cut into small slices, sauté that. And then I make a dressing, mixing vinegar and mustard together add a little chicken broth and some oil and chopped onion. And if you don't want to spend time making your own dressing, buy your favorite vinegar and oil dressing and add some chopped onion to it. Toss the dressing with the warm potatoes so the potatoes will absorb the dressing. Add the sausages. Serve with some sliced tomatoes and a warm baguette. Simple and easy. The complete recipe and a photo, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And so please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, can I guess what we're drinking?
Well, here is a tough question for you. What do you think I'm going to recommend with fried chicken?
I have a feeling it's going to be a little bubbly on my tongue. That's my feeling.
Of course. Bubbly. Now, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't pop a $200 vintage Dom Perignon for fried chicken, but a nice sturdy Spanish cava or Italian bubbly in the $10 range or a $20 California sparkler would be just fine. And this is not just my prejudice. There's actually a logic to it. It's because what I call those scrubbing bubbles in sparkling wine will strip away the fat from your tongue and refresh your palate for the next bite. So it's a matter of, I don't know, physics or chemistry or something.
Or just the fact that you like bubbly?
Well, it doesn't hurt.
And you do know that we actually created our fried chicken event down here called Chicken Coop. And it's a double play on words, thinking that coop is where a chicken lives. But it's really a coop glass that champagne is served in. And we do a dinner over the South Beach Wine and Food Festival, not a dinner, a walk-around reception, where we have 15 or 20 chefs all doing their take on chicken, many of them featured in Fried and True. And we serve them all with different marks of champagne. And Fred was right. They don't have to be Dom Perignon, although we do serve Dom Perignon and Laurent Perrier and Cristal with the fried chicken. Or it could be a simple cava or sparkling wine. But I couldn't agree more that it makes a lot of sense and it
Fred,
does take the fat.
Well, that absolutely
your newest best friend, Fred.
Yes. Yeah. What can be better than the simplest visceral of foods like fried chicken and a sparkling wine or champagne.
Yeah. Now, I'm not the only fan of this, obviously. Harold's Fried Chicken Shack in Chicago is a favorite restaurant of President Obama's, and the Chicago Tribune critics there say that good old sparkling wine is the best match for his signature dish, which is fried chicken and waffles.
But fried chicken and waffles is one dish?
One dish, yeah.
Do you know how fried chicken and waffles got started?
No.
Well, I'm going to tell you very quickly. There's a club up in Harlem called Guilt, G-U-I-L-T, where all the late jazz performers used to go in the 50s and 60s. And the jazz singers couldn't get there. It was too. By the time they got there after their performance, it was too late for dinner and too early for breakfast, and one of them put together waffles and fried chicken because it was an in-between breakfast and dinner, and that's how fried chicken and waffles became a staple, and Frank Sinatra is the one who made it famous.
Oh, there
you know
you
what
go.
I'm wondering is, do you order both then? Do you eat both the waffles and the fried chicken?
They come with it. Actually, yes. There are a few recipes in my book, Fried and True, that have a waffle recipe with it.
And I've tasted, tasted one recipe from your book.
Asha Gomez, the cardamom from Cardamom Hill in Atlanta, she has an emerald green fried chicken that's sensational.
And it has, there was one with the maple syrup over the fried chicken in the waffle.
Yes, from Brooklyn. And I'm now going to screw up her name, so I'm not going to say it.
Okay, well, anyway, it was very good. Go ahead, Fred, go ahead.
Yeah, well, as Bonnie did, I sort of thought of fried chicken as a Southern dish, and I think it is part of their heritage. But unfortunately, for my taste anyway, Southerners tend to accompany fried chicken with iced tea. And I mean sweetened iced tea.
Sorry, Fred.
And Fred, we know we do have a recipe in Fried and True of a chicken that is brined in a sweet tea brine. And I have to tell you.
Is it good?
It's delicious.
It's good, Fred.
It wouldn't be in Fried and True. And that recipe came from my friends at Blackberry Farm in Tennessee. They created the recipe for me. They didn't want to give me their classic Blackberry Farms. So they created a sweet tea brined iced chicken, fried chicken, that's really sensational.
And what did they drink with it?
Probably not sweet tea.
In the movie Steel Magnolias, Dolly Parton's character calls sweet tea the house wine of the South.
Absolutely.
So I guess it's kind of inevitable. And when they say sweet, they mean it. I saw a recipe that made an iced tea that was 22% sugar.
Wow.
Which is more sugar than an RC Cola and a moon pie. Right.
Together?
Yeah. Together.
Okay.
And in the southern city of Atlanta, I once had fried chicken, fried green tomatoes, and cornbread at Aunt Pitty Pat's Porch.
Oh, it's delicious.
The restaurant
we were there.
Film Gone with the Wind, named after Melanie's aunt.
Right.
And the wine list there was kind of limited, so I had a drink they called Sweet Peach. And it was peach-flavored vodka mixed with, you guessed it, highly sweetened iced tea.
Wish okay.
At least it had a little wallop to it. Now, Lee's book mentions the great fried chicken at the French Laundry in California's wine country. And as Linda mentioned, the meal there is $300 or more, so I figure you'd want to have something equally expensive from its wine list, so you could order a bottle of 1996 Krug champagne for $6,000. Or, as Lee mentioned, you could have it with Dom Perignon. I guess it's got to be okay that way.
Which looks good next to $6,000.
Yeah. But anyway, if you want to stay solvent, take my advice and have a nice, inexpensive, sparkling wine with your fried chicken.
Okay. So he wants to know, what do you drink with your fried chicken?
I love rosé champagne, and I have to say that I oftentimes drink Laurent Perrier rosé champagne. Although recently I've been on book tour and I've been drinking a lot of Lisa Vanderpump's, the Real Housewife of L.A., has a great new sangria out.
Oh, yes.
And I'll tell you, it happens to be quite good. But champagne is my drink of choice.
Now, do you think something with a little sweetness does go with the fried chicken because it has the sweetness of the fat?
I think so. I think it complements it. I think the it cuts it. And it complements at the same time.
And can Lee tell us his dinner in minutes recipe for fried chicken?
Oh, the Hai Vong one?
No, he wants...
No,
yeah.
He said he had a quick one.
Yeah, you have...
A quick recipe?
Yeah.
Well, fried chicken's the easiest thing in the world. People make it harder than it is. It's as simple as having chicken. And another tip is to use chicken that's cold. Take it from the refrigerator that's kind of chilled already, because you'll find that the crust sticks better to
it. Chicken pieces, you mean?
Chicken pieces.
Right,
so
okay.
Have a chicken that's cut up, have a self-rising flour, have an egg bath, take chicken, dip it in the egg bath, dip it in the flour, put it in oil that's 370 degrees, and cook it for 10 to 12 minutes, and voila, you have a sensational fried and true chicken dinner.
There you go. Okay. But he uses self-raising flour. That's interesting that he does that. And, you know, we only have half a minute left, but in your book you have sides as well. And I was amazed with your hash brown casserole. Big surprise, you use refrigerated shredded potatoes and a can of cream of chicken soup. Sounds a little bit like the 1950s.
It's a little white trashy, but delicious. And our tomato pie also
white
has...
White trashy, okay.
Yeah, and our tomato pie that's also in the book has Ritz crackers in it. So, you know what? It's from all ends of the planet. Fried chicken can, hoity-toity, or the simplest of recipes are in fried.
Well, this is real American food.
This is Americana food.
Real Scottish food.
That's right. Served with haggis.
Okay. Well, this has been really a tasty week. Lee Schwager, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here, Bonnie. Good to talk to you, Fred and Linda. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Okay. His book is Fried and True, More Than 50 Recipes for America's Best Fried Chicken and Sides. And believe me, the pictures of the sides are just fabulous. It's a fascinating book to read and a delicious one to experience. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Bonnie Berman, great to be with you.
Yes, likewise.
And wishing Joe well. Wishing him to come back soon, Joe. Next week, we're going to be talking with the author of The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. And along with Dr. Neil Bernard, he's an adjunct associate professor of medicine at Georgetown University's Schools of Medicine. So it should be an interesting program. It's going to be 1 hour long.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.